Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Lieutenant Colonel Boyd, and he has a fascinating story you'll certainly want to hear. But before we get to Colonel Boyd, I just wanted to comment. You know, the media is so slanted. We were just listening on our local radio station to information put out by the Salem Radio Network. Now, the Salem Network is a Christian network, but it is an establishment Christian network that puts out the establishment point of view. And they will not, of course, ever say anything praiseworthy of Congressman Ron Paul, who's running third in the polls, and yet they just announced certainly what Rick Perry did today and what Kane did today and what Huntsman did today. And but, of course, they don't mention Ron Paul very pointedly. In fact, the other day I heard them quoting Kane, and there had been a poll, I believe it was in New Hampshire or wherever it was. It was put on by the Family Research Council, and Tony Perkins had put it on. And certainly after that, Kane had been interviewed, and he was talking about how he didn't want to run for the presidency. The reason he's running for the presidency is God told him to, and he told God he didn't want to be running for the presidency, but God said, you know, just like I told Moses, you know, why you ought to run for the presidency. And after all, Moses didn't want to suddenly go back and get the Jewish people out of Egypt and lead them to the promised land. But he obeyed God, and so Cain, of course, is obeying God, and he's going to run for the presidency. And then they mentioned that he came in second in this poll, and, oh, yeah, Congressman Paul came in first. And then they went on to something quickly. Notice how they are totally ignoring Ron Paul in all the commentaries, both written and television, and occasionally you'll see him, but he is not getting the play that Perry and Cain and Huntsman and Romney are getting, because, of course, he's the one person who wants to get us out of our military adventures. He wants to cut back on globalism. He wants to cut back on government. And all the rest of them want to make government work and work more efficiently. We have a controlled media. And right now, of course, one of the important things we're going to be talking about is war. And, you know, we send our brave men off to fight in wars, and there are lots of acts of heroism you'll never hear about. And suddenly Colonel Boyd was involved in a secret operation during the Korean War, and you've never heard of it. Almost everybody was with him was killed. But Colonel Boyd, of course, was sworn to secrecy, wasn't allowed to talk about it for many, many years until afterwards. But he eventually wrote a book about it because, of course, it had weighed on him. He couldn't even tell his wife what had really transpired. Colonel Boyd, tell us about the story and the name of the book, which we do incidentally carry.
Well, Dr. Stan, I greatly appreciate your providing me an opportunity to share what 76 brave men accomplished 59 years ago of world peace and order. Prior to January 1952, many within Washington were openly hostile toward the president over the firing of General of the Army Douglas MacArthur. Well, President Harry S. Truman's public approval rating had dropped to an all-time low, and he was being pressured to order a military offensive action which was designed to drive the Chinese army north across the Yellow River that divided Korea from Manchuria. So Truman had lost confidence in intelligence information being fed to him, and reports received concerning the strength, composition, the battle readiness, the intention of the enemy continued to be flawed. And during a meeting with General MacArthur on Wake Island, Truman had been led to believe that the Communist Chinese Army would not enter the war. Within months, the Chinese struck, unprepared UN forces across the Yalu.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Colonel Boyd, you go right ahead with the story.
Well, intelligence information being received from the 4 East Command and the Central Intelligence Agency continue to be distorted, biased, out of date, incomplete.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
To North Korea and try to pick up intelligence as to what was really going on and what the status was of the Chinese communists and what they would do if he were to launch a major attack. Now, basically, Colonel Boyd, I think, was a first lieutenant at the time, first or second lieutenant?
First lieutenant.
First lieutenant, and he, of course, was at skills. He could actually send and receive 40 words per minute with Morse code. He had this, and it was knew about communications. He could operate radio equipment. He was in top-notch shape, and he was chosen out of everybody in the military to be the person who would actually get the information and send it back. Suddenly, while this small group of people were working behind enemy lines, and this was, what was the year now?
Beg your pardon, sir?
What year was this?
That was 1952, January 1952.
January 1952. He was chosen for the secret mission, and did you have to volunteer for it?
Yes, I certainly did volunteer for it, but there was some coercion there, and I knew that volunteering would enhance my career, and not volunteering might enhance my release. So I volunteered, if you want to call it that.
All right, fine. So you volunteered, but you never really even knew the true names of the other Americans who were with you, did you? Because this was so secret.
No, I didn't know their true names. There was a total of 10 of us. that was on the team. The pilot was, his name was Bill Robbins, and that certainly wasn't his real name. Co-pilot was Sam Puller. The navigator was Jim Pearson. The two CIA guys actually were bona fide CIAs. One was named Jerry Hensley, and the second was named John Tyler. Then there was a frogman, two frogmen, in fact. One was named Tom Capeman, and the other one was Reed Lynch. And then two Rangers, Don Kingsley and Ted Moody, and that made up the 10. And we were chosen, you might say, and all volunteered for the mission.
All right, and then there was a fairly large contingent of nationalist Chinese, but you can't tell one Chinese person from another. So basically, and so how did they get you ashore in North Korea?
Well, going back a little bit, on the 7th of January of 1952, we all met at Camp Drake, Japan, for staging. And then staging was completed. We traveled by submarine from Japan to the shore of North Korea. And we landed on the 11th of January, 1952, close to Kosong, K-O-S-O-N-G, and traveled across the peninsula from that point in a mock military convoy, which consisted of a dozen trucks, all painted up with Chinese insignia. And we were supposedly prisoners, and posing as prisoners of that had been taken from the crew of a B-29 that had gone down over North Korea during the month December of 1952.
And that was in the cover story that was going to get you through the enemy lines. Yeah. I mean, they would wonder what suddenly the group of Americans were doing, and because the whole idea was that you were being transferred from the east coast of North Korea to the west coast, then to be taken by ship to China. Was that correct?
That's right. We were going to go to a spot near the Pyongyang capital, south of it. Actually, it's the Hwasong, which was a port, and we'd be taken aboard a Chinese gunboat and taken across the Korean Bay over to mainland China.
Now, of course, there was no truth in this. This was all a cover story.
That was a cover story.
They needed an excuse, and of course, the people who were taking them had all sorts of papers to prove that this was a legitimate exercise. And so every time they were stopped, well, they could show their papers and here we've got the prisoners, we're taking them. So pick up the story then. What happened?
Well, when we got to the area of the Forgotten War in Korea, we mounted this half track that had been converted, an American half track from World War II, a leftover thing, but had been converted to a half track with a great big red star painted on it. And we were members of that team, which were captives, so to speak. There were two half tracks. Five of us went in one, five in the other half track. And we then started to proceed across the peninsula. We traveled by night, not by day. During daytime, we were bivouacked in different places. And in fact, the first night bivouac, or the first day bivouac, was Wonsan, which was a big port along the east coast of North Korea.
Now, basically, of course, the whole idea was that there were intelligence agents who were going to contact you and actually get you information about what was going on. So there was a network of spies.
Oh, yes.
And they knew that what was going on, and they were going to be contacting you, and they were going to be providing you information then that would be relayed to the President of the United States. Is that correct?
That's correct. There were 22 that had gone in about 6 months before we had. And became members of the military within the North Korean and Chinese armies. And they were really quite brave men. They were able to put together information. The information then was turned over to the two CIA agents on the convoy. The CIA agents then changed from Chinese or North Korean to English and gave those reports to me. And I then put them into a code, a top secret code with an encryption machine. And then I was able to transmit that five-letter code groups over the air to an airborne receiver that was either traveling or flying over the over South Korea or the Sea of Japan. And that information then was taken to Japan and then retransmitted by the military communications network to the United States and ended up in the president's office.
Well, now, basically, couldn't the North Koreans intercept these, at least, communications?
Oh, yes, certainly. And that's possibly why the convoy was hit. On the last day of the mission, we were only hours from being to a place where we could be extracted when the convoy was hit and destroyed. And that was just past Onchin in North Korea. And the convoy was hit, and all of my comrades, except for two, were killed.
Now, basically, of course, what was the information, the intelligence information, that, of course, was relayed to you from the spies that had been sent in 6 months ahead of time?
Well, I gave the name of the units, the composition of the units, the strength of the units, the battle readiness of the units. It told where the ammunition storage was, how much ammo was there, what weapons they had. In other words, it was all the information the commander would love to have in his hands concerning the enemy. And that was the information that was provided. But one thing that really did throw me was a piece of information that came in on the second night, and that was that the Soviets had heavy bombers, which were parked in Manchuria, loaded with atomic weapons, and that authority had been granted to a field commander to use those weapons if we had launched an all-out assault to drive the Chinese back into Manchuria. And that really shook me up. I'll tell you, as I was encoding that and transmitting it, brought home the fact that this thing could turn into World War III. And I'm just grateful that it didn't go that direction.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, Chris, you're just in a few hours of actually getting to the point where you're going to be taken out. And, Chris, once you got to the west coast of south of North Korea, why you were going to contact a submarine and they were going to pick you up. Was that the plan?
Well, the HMS Cardigan Bay, a British frigate, was offshore and patrolling the area along the west coast of North Korea in the Yellow Sea, between the Yellow Sea and the Korean Bay. And we had a signal light, which was part of an emergency kit that we were able to carry. And that signal light would then could give visible light as to our sending it to the sea. And it couldn't be seen from the land side, but could be seen from the sea. They'd pick up that light, and then they would call in an Air Force rescue. An Air Force rescue would come out of the Kimpo Air Base, which was in South Korea, very close to Seoul. And they'd fly in and pick us up off of the pickup point, and then we were extracted and taken back to South Korea. Well, there's only three of us that made that contact. The others had been killed.
And basically, the somebody had obviously a sense that what was going on was not correct. Whether they'd picked up the communications or what it was, but I said up to this point why these North Korean commanders had accepted the explanation. What was it that caused them to attack? Because after all, you could have been a North Korean convoy or a Chinese convoy taking prisoners. What really made the North Koreans decide to attack your unit?
Well, we had left Hanju, which is a city along the Yellow Sea coast, and we had arrived at Onjin, and we were then intercepted by a Chinese officer, a senior officer, who really believed that we were not as we proposed to be. He thought that we were spies. And so he then tried to take our leader into his own camp and then, you know, find out what was going on. Well, Dr. Stan, as it is, we stayed pat, and as a consequence, he went back to his own unit, and before he knew it, three T-34 tanks were on top of us, and destroy the convoy.
All right, and almost everybody was killed. We'll be right back. Well, that must have been really heartbreaking at that point when you were just so close to getting to the point where you were going to be able to be evacuated.
Yes, it was. It was heartbreaking. It was, and on the trip.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
The Chinese who were with him, presumably all of the Chinese who were with him, died. So, of course, now you have two badly wounded people, and suddenly Lieutenant Boyd is there, and of course he picks up a Browning automatic rifle, and they start a 32-mile trek to get to the point where they're going to be picked up. And, Chris, that's a long way to walk. It's cold. It's icy. And both of the people who are with them are just in terrible shape. And Lieutenant Boyd has to help them and drag them along with him. And then, of course, they are and come across a patrol of North Vietnamese soldiers. They've got their guns slung across their back, and there are five of them, and there's just Colonel Boyd and two badly wounded Americans. And he has no choice but to actually just kill them all. He has a Browning automatic rifle, and he's able to just kill all of them. One of them, of course, was still alive. He walked over, Colonel Boyd went over to see him and held him in his arm, and the fellow kept talking to him in North Korea. And later on, Colonel Boyd learned what the man had said. And that was, "I forgive you. I forgive you." And basically in war, why the soldiers on the other side are not necessarily your enemy, but it's a matter of kill or be killed. And Colonel Boyd had to do what he had to do. He had to protect the two men who were with him. And so they how long did it take you to cover that 32 miles?
It took us 2 days. From the time the convoy was hit to darkness on the second day, and it was a very harrowing trip. We didn't rest very much. We couldn't rest very much, but we made it, and it was through a mountain pass. And if you ever walked a trail through a mountain pass, you know that's not a leisurely stroll. It's difficult. It's particularly when you're hitting spots of ice and loose rock and what have you. But by the grace of God, we made it, sir. We made it. And
then you were able to actually to signal the frigate? And
did they
get the plane to come in and pick you up or what?
Oh, yeah. No, I started transmitting that second night. I set up the signal light on a tripod and sent the signal and SOS, with the OBR. The Operation Broken Reed was the code, and anyone spotting it then would recognize that and know, you know, whom we are. And that I just kept sending that off and on through the night. It was very near dawn when we were spotted. I'd almost given up, and I knew that we couldn't go any further, that we'd probably be taken captive or shot where we were on that ledge. It was a fairly flat ledge, about around 300 meters in length, the sea was in front of us, and the hill was behind us. We had nowhere to go, except where we were. And of course, the helicopter came in. When he came in, he banked directly over us, and I thought he was going to crash, but then he sat down, and the two fellows, crewmen, jumped out, pulled us aboard. And the enemy started firing at us. They came down off of that trail at the far end of it, just as we pulled away. And we got back to Seoul and landed at Kimpo. And there were three bullet rounds, which were just above the cabin in which we were sitting. Went right through. And the pilot said, "Well, all in a day's work, you know." He took it quite lightheartedly. I'll say this: if you want to be frightened, then join the military and get into combat. Now, I guarantee you will be frightened.
Well, basically, of course, then you were taken back to be debriefed, and then you were told that you could never tell the story for 46 years.
That's true. Loyalty to my security oath demanded that I remain silent for 46 years. Well, I had another year just to be on the safe side. As those years passed, I yearned to learn the true identity of those dead comrades. More than anything, I wanted to meet with their relatives in order to share what the kin accomplished for the sake of world peace and order.
And did you ever find out who any of them were or contact you?
No, I've done my best. I've contacted every military and other office that I can think of. And I'm appealing now, if anyone lost a relative in the month of January, and it's not explained in the land of Korea, I'd like to know.
All right, hold on there. If anybody has a question, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295.
While the storm clouds gather, far across This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
People are becoming more aware of the dangers of fluoride in their drinking water. We're offering you a proven way to remove more than 95% of this dangerous chemical, which threatens your good health. It's the Whole House Fluoride Removal System, available right now from Radio Liberty. This system will also remove aluminum, manganese, arsenic, lead, and most heavy metals. Your fear regarding these dangerous chemicals in the water you drink can be eased by getting more information from RadioLiberty.com. Go to RadioLiberty.com right now and find out all you need to know about protecting your home's precious water supply. Read the information about the Whole House Water Fluoride Removal System and order one. Free shipping is included in every purchase. You can also call 1-800-544-8927. Where's that information? RadioLiberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927.
From our ministry by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. It's available, I'm sure, on the internet, from Borders, from most bookstores. And it's a fascinating story of bravery, that a true story that the Colonel Boyd lived. Sidney, he was ordered never to tell anyone what had happened. And you couldn't even tell your wife, could you, Colonel?
No, I couldn't. And that would have helped a lot. Oftentimes, I was off in my own world, and it was difficult for her to understand what I was going through. It was kind of a tough time. 47 years. But at the end of the 47th year, I told her. She was absolutely blown away by the whole thing. And she said, "Well, now I understand. I understand."
Well, now, basically, you were told that you just keep quiet. You would actually be allowed to stay in the military for 20 years if you wanted to, and you'd be promoted. And certainly, and that was sort of how you were paid back for what you did, because you could never get a medal or anything, because no one was to even know what had happened.
Well, the medal isn't important. It really isn't to me, knowing that what we accomplished. That's really what was important. But you know something, Dr. Stan, my journey filled in with the writing of that book. It's now my very fond hope to return to that desolate road in North Korea where I was forced to abandon my teammates. And I wish with all my heart to honor my comrades by placing a wreath on the place where they fell. Unfortunately, my plan is blocked because the United States remains officially at war with the government of North Korea. As we have no diplomatic ties with that nation, my plan remains on hold. Well, I've been haunted by the memories falling and broken readmission for over a half century. Go ahead, sir.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. You have a question for Colonel Boyd. He has an amazing, amazing story. You're not going to hear about this. There are lots of stories, certainly by heroic men or for one reason or another, they're thrown into dangerous situations. But so much that goes on with the military is classified. But why would you have to keep this classified for, 46, 47 years? Well, it doesn't matter. There may not be any reason for it. But, of course, you were never going to get the truth about so many things that have happened during the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the World War II and even what's going on certainly over in the Middle East today. Everything is classified. We can't let the American people know. And this is the tragedy. Did you ever ask them why they insisted on keeping this secret for so long? Did you ever actually have any further contact with the intelligence agencies?
Well, not after the mission, but certainly during the pre-mission briefing, we were given ample reason to know why this would be hidden. First of all, unfortunately, there are those that would do harm to anyone that was engaged in the mission, particularly from the other side. So it was to protect those that were involved. And we had a number of people were involved in the operation, not only the team members, our own team, plus those nationalist Chinese, but there were a lot of people that were in the support role for that. And it was a lot of that is to protect them, to keep them from harm, from anything ever happening to them because of their participation. And then, of course, there was the thing going on with President Truman. He was not in good terms with many of the military and many within his own administration and within the Congress of the United States. MacArthur had been fired by him. And that was a big thing that continued to plague him. And he just wasn't in favor with a number of people in Washington. And he wanted this thing secret, and that was his order, and that was what was carried out.
All right. And, of course, once again, if anybody in the listening audience lost someone, a loved one in Korea in January of 1952, why Colonel Boyd's and, of course, their death would have been covered up or under one guise or another. But if anybody had lost a loved one or a relative at that time, January of 1952, why, you might want to contact Colonel Boyd. He's spent all these years since this episode trying to find out who the people were on the mission with him. They were all, more or less put in a position where they had to volunteer or their careers would have been over. Do you have a telephone number? Do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out?
Well, I'd rather, if they will, Dr. Stan, simply to contact you and you can pass that information on. If that's not too much.
No, no, not at all. Our telephone number, of course, as everybody who listens to our program knows, is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You can always remember, it was 1-800-5-HIV war. That was the original way we remembered it, 1-800-5-HIV war, because, of course, we're at war. I used this when I wrote my first book on AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, and indeed we put out an awful lot of that book, Sydney, over all sorts of objections. How has your book actually been received? Has it gotten fairly
well,
good coverage?
I guess I've been blessed. It's break even. The book is sold enough to pay for all the expenses. I think there's about $3,000 that sits in the till right now. I'm not touching any money of that at all, Dr. Stan. I hope whatever the funds is, I can use that money to really honor the men It's not my money. It belongs to them. And I might say that right now, there's been a screenplay which has been written in Hollywood, and it's on the Operation Broken Reed, and this in the works. We don't know if it's going to be a movie or not, but it very well might come that way. If it does, again, whatever comes out of that belongs to the team members.
Well, let's hope and pray it does, because I think it's a sort of story of heroism that really is so important. People have to understand the sacrifice that our military makes, and whether we agree with our mission or not is not important. The important thing is that these are heroic people who actually believe what they're doing is right because they love America, and they're willing to risk their lives, and many people gave their lives in Korea and Vietnam and certainly in the current wars we're fighting and the World War II because they believed in America. And the question is, I would ask the people in the audience, do you believe in America enough that you'd be willing to risk your life? All our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, this is a story we've heard before, but we love to hear it. I certainly marvel at it every time Colonel Boyd comes on and certainly tells the story because it's a true story of heroism. And we have a caller, and I hope our producer will pick that up. And then if you're out there in the listening audience, you do have a question for Colonel Boyd, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Oh, it's certainly one of my favorite callers. That would be Barbara from SoCal. Hi, Barbara from SoCal.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Hi, Dr. Colonel Boyd. How are you doing?
Well, I'm alive.
Yeah, I'm, praise God.
83 and still kicking.
Wonderful. I hear you're the same age as Dr. Stan.
Oh, well, no, he's much younger than I.
I know. You don't sound that any older than he does.
Oh, my.
But I am still in the midst of reading the remainder of your story, but I want to tell people that your book is probably one of the most incredible stories I have ever read, and I have passed this on to other people. And they have said the same thing, that you, as you read your story, you feel like you are part of your team.
Well, thank you very much. It took me 5 years to write that. 5 years, because I didn't want to write it.
Well, I can see why.
I was encouraged by the Veterans Administration. I went there for PTSD counseling, trying to get my mind to relieve some of the things that I found myself going through, and everyone pushed and pushed, and so 5 years after, once I put my pen in hand, it became a book. But well, I've been haunted by the memories following that mission for over a half century, as you know, the indescribable sight, sound, and smell of the battlefield, death, and destruction will remain with me for the balance of my life, and I'm certain that that's the same with anyone that has gone through combat. And I have an answer to much of it. I think that every world leader should be compelled to be immersed within the battlefield while the air remains filled with the acrid smoke and stench of mortal combat. And they should be forced to crawl among the dead and view the mutilated, punctured, burned, twisted, bloody, and severed bodies, to inhale the stench of death and to wallow in the presence of a forbidden scene of man-made destruction. And I think if they did so, maybe we wouldn't have war. I don't know.
I don't know, but I know you certainly went through it, and I kind of agree with you that, you know, it wouldn't be so easy to send people into war if they could actually see what they were sending them into.
Yes, but I believe so.
But your story, I ask everybody who is listening to this program, you know, read this book. I don't think I've ever read a book that I felt I was part of your team, was part of what you were going through you went through it. And it was just incredible.
Well, thank you.
Certainly it is an excellent book, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading it. And basically, I mean, you have a feeling that you're right there, certainly, with this team, a team of Americans, and the Chinese that were there as well. But there were 10 Americans on this volunteer mission, hoping to collect intelligence to be able to influence the course of the decisions made in Washington, D.C. An Operation Broken Reed is a powerful, powerful commentary on bravery. And, of course, I don't think Colonel Boyd was a Christian at the time.
No.
And, of course, why don't you tell a little bit about how this experience transformed your life and led you into a personal relationship with our Lord?
Well, it transformed me, all right. It brought me into realization that we have a Savior. And I met that Savior while I was serving in Alaska. At that time, I was a major and had been on the list to become lieutenant colonel. And I made the decision and moved in that direction. It's something that is so personal and so deep that it's difficult to find the right words to express what my life has been like. It's transformed to where I understand and realize that we're not traveling this road alone, that he is with us.
And I think, you know, it's amazing, the other nine people probably all dead. Seven of them immediately killed, and the other two probably subsequently died of their wounds. And then you ask yourself, why me? Why was I the one who survived? But, of course, I believe that God does work in the affairs of men, and certainly he picks certain people who will survive. Of all the people, you were the only one who really came through it, as far as we know.
Well, you know, after it was all over, I decided to go to seminary. So I went to 4 years of seminary, Bethel Theological Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Master Divinity degree and ordained as a minister and went on to be a hospital and institutional chaplain. And I was honored to witness and to serve with men of distinction, those men that had served their country. It was a humbling thing and rewarding. And I'm glad that I was able to do so.
And, of course, was that as a military chaplain or was this just as a
civilian chaplain?
Okay.
Metropolitan Hospital and North Memorial Hospital in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and also Hazleton, which was a treatment center for chemically dependent people. I served as a chaplain there and served as a chaplain for several small churches. And mainly, though, I wanted to reach out to the men that were suffering and not the physical wounds so much, but what went on in their mind and what the terror that they experience, and in every day, it's horrifying. Anyway.
Barbara, do you have another thought, any other question you'd like to bring up? I guess we lost Barbara. If you're out there in the listening audience, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But ladies and gentlemen, there's so many of our men who've been in battle, whether it had been in Korea or in Vietnam or in Gulf War I or in Gulf War II, who are really hurting today. And certainly war changes your whole outlook. I mean, certainly facing death and being in a situation where you're either going to kill or be killed. War, somebody once said, war is hell, and I believe that. And I believe, of course, that it is not a solution to any of our problems. That doesn't mean I'm a pacifist. I believe that we have to be able to defend our country. But, of course, should we defend our country, or should we be the policemen of the world? I believe we should have a strong defense for America. But I'm against, of course, the America being the policeman of the world, because that has nothing to do with America. It has everything to do with another agenda, which we talk about repeatedly here on our program, the globalist agenda, which is entirely different than the American agenda. Well, Colonel Boyd does actually support Radio Liberty, and we do appreciate his support for our ministry, and he helps us because I think he believes in our message, knowing that this is a spiritual battle and certainly behind everything going on today. Colonel, would you like to comment on the spiritual battle you see underway today?
Well, sir, I know that the evil is among us, that Satan is in charge on this world scene, and there's only one way that we can take care of this situation, and it is to trust God, the Lord Jesus Christ, and let Him do the work.
And I think that that's, of course, what it's all about. It isn't a political battle or a financial or cultural or ideological battle. It's a spiritual battle being fought on a political, cultural, ideological, and financial battlefield. We'll be back here in just a moment with Justin from Washington. Well, Justin, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, I didn't really have a question. I was more...
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download and print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that, thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security in plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
Of this experience, and really, of course, the realization that God had to have preserved him. Everybody else was killed or mortally wounded, and why did God preserve him? Well, perhaps so that he could tell the story, perhaps that his story would lead others to our personal relationship with our Lord. Well, I don't know why, but God does work in the affairs of men. I see it all the time in our ministry. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out there that this is the last night I will be telling you about our all-day seminar. It's going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course here in the North Coast, Monterey Bay, and of course, it's going to have a great time. We're bringing in speakers from the east and from the north, and basically we're going to open the doors at 7:30 in the morning, and we're going to go through till 5:30 or 6 in the evening. But this time we're going to do something a little different. We're going to have a panel at the end of the day, and certainly we're going to have time for questions and answers, and we're going to give our speakers more time. In fact, I went back to Littleton about Colorado a couple of weeks ago, and I mean they had so many speakers I didn't get a chance to get to the important part of my talk, and I had to cut it off. And so we're going to give people, and all of the speakers are so grateful for the idea, that they're going to have plenty of time to present what they want to tell you. And so this is going to be, I think, going to be a very interesting experience. And we hope that if you're going to come, you're going to have to call today or tomorrow, because, of course, we have to know by tomorrow. We have to let the hotel know how many people are going to be there for dinner, for lunch. So give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and I hope it'll be a great experience for you. And then, of course, we do want to mention that my ministry is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help, why, we'll appreciate it. We do want to thank the people who've given so generously from all across the country, and it's an encouragement to me to know that people I've never met at all really trust me and certainly want to support what we're doing. And basically, of course, we are picking up some new stations. We've got a new station in Southern California down around San Bernardino. We have a new station in Las Vegas. It's at 3 o'clock in the morning, but Las Vegas is a city that never sleeps. And then, of course, we have our program there in Phoenix, Arizona, on 12:30 noon on Saturdays, and a couple of stations back there in Utah. These are just relatively new over the last couple of months, and we will pick up any station we can, we think we'll be able to have an impact and reach people with the truth about what's going on. Unfortunately, because what Alex Jones is doing and what Joyce Riley is doing and John Leffler and other people we know and we work with and we respect, more and more Americans are waking up, and certainly we see this with the Occupy Wall Street. These young idealistic children have no idea what's going on. They're young people that suddenly have a rather bleak future, and they do have a bleak future because there are people who want to destroy America and our foundation of freedom. These are elitists who are using the military and financial power of the United States to bring about a world government. Just today, they announced that they're moving troops into Uganda from our African command. Admittedly, only 100, but that's how Vietnam started. Just a few troops there, just advisory troops. So we've just moved 100 troops into Uganda from their African command, and we have an Asian command and a South American command. Why would we have a South American command? Why? Because our real foreign policy is globalism and a one world government. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. And we ask you to pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be views of William Grigg, who, a former editor of the New American Magazine, now he's probably the senior editor of the Republic Magazine, an excellent conservative magazine, which is a parallel publication of something called The Survivalist. And then, of course, William has his own blog, and you'll certainly want to get his information. William Grigg, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Well, why don't you tell us what the issue is you'd like to talk about tonight, because there are so many issues, so many things coming down, whether it be what I believe is a scam, this totally contrived story about the high level people there in Iran want to blow up the embassies, and I don't know whether the United States or in Argentina, and kill the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States. But Saudi Arabia is calling for an attack on Iran, and Senator John Kerry, member of Skull and Bones, member of the Trilateral Commission, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, John Kerry is calling for an attack on Iran, or certainly reprisals on Iran. And so Hillary Clinton, whose husband's a member of the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations. So we see this whole thing cooked up by the establishment. And is this simply a diversion? Are they going to have some sort of a military action? Or are they simply playing games with our emotions again? I quite frankly don't know. I have some very reliable people who tell me there's going to be an attack. I have other people who tell me there's not going to be anything. And my response is, I just don't know. But William, what are we going to talk about tonight?
We have to talk about what you were just alluding to, Dr. Stan. And I am confident to the point of a moral certainty that we're dealing once again with a perfectly confected plot, that this is once again Homeland Security Theater. It's the same tired soap opera, kabuki theater melodramatics that we have been immersed in since no later than 2002. And of course, intermittently throughout the history of our country, this is something that has always been the leitmotif of the war party, that our enemies are reptilian, that they are unlike us in radical ways. They behave in ways that defy logical calculation. They are involved in Byzantine plots of spectacular complexity. They're all powerful and yet somehow perfectly incompetent at the same time. So we're always victorious but perpetually besieged, and only if we throw ourselves on the mercy of the omnipotent and all-benevolent state and allow ourselves to be marshaled and mobilized on behalf of war can we possibly be safe. This so-called Iranian plot is the sort of thing that might have been hatched by strategic geniuses of the caliber of Pinky and the Brain from the old Warner Brothers cartoon and carried out by operatives who have all the suavity and dexterity of Maxwell Smart and Inspector Clouseau. It's the most perfect nonsense, but you know what? This is probably, as one person, Scott Horton, pointed out, the Zimmerman telegram that will lead to war with Iran if the war party has its way. That's the perfectly terrifying part.
I think most people, unfortunately, don't remember the Zimmerman telegram, but that's how they got us into World War One. Ambassador Zimmerman, the German ambassador to, pardon me, the German foreign minister, supposedly sends a letter to his ambassador over in Mexico and says, boy, if it looks like we're going to be a war between America and Germany, why, you have the Mexicans attack America, and then he admits it. Go right ahead.
The Zimmerman telegram is, of course, geographically relevant to this discussion because we're dealing with a supposed plot between the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the Quds Force, the uber-elite of the special forces within the Iranian military, they always have, in every one of these scripted melodramas, a supposedly hyper-elite that's a little bit like Hydra from the old Captain America comic books. I mean, and I must apologize for adverting repeatedly to the world of cartoons and comic books, but quite frankly, that's the mindset we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with people who function at a level of sophistication appropriate to the behavior of actual practicing adults, and the fact that they inflict these cartoonish plots on us really reflects their dismal view of the American public's aggregate intelligence, and quite frankly, we live down to their expectations too often. But supposedly, a Mexican drug cartel, the most conveniently demonized Zetas, which are an American-trained and probably American-equipped narcotics cartel, was going to contract, or was supposedly in a position to contract, to the Al-Quds force to carry out an assassination of the Saudi ambassador, and just for added spice, perhaps an Israeli official at a location somewhere in the United States, perhaps. The details, of course, are all studiously vague, just as vague as the insistence of the Barack Hussein Obama administration is pronounced, that they are confident, that they are certain that this is a legitimate plot, that the evidence is sound, and that they have connected it to the highest echelons of the Iranian government. Once again, the details are as vague as those assurances are insistent, and it's all the most perfect pack of nonsense. Here's the thing that I find most remarkable about the geometry, if you will, of this supposed plot, Dr. Stan. We're dealing here with a plot involving a DEA informant who was involved with a Mexican drug cartel who seduced a mentally infirm recidivist criminal, a borderline alcoholic who probably has some kind of clinical mental deficiency, into a supposed plot to bring about a wedding between the Mexican drug cartels and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard to conduct this assassination. So you have a DEA informant who's representing a U.S.-trained and equipped Mexican drug cartel who defies this purported assassination plot to this manipulable dimwit. Is that, if you read the document...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is certainly explaining how this whole thing works, because you can't understand anything that's going on today in the world unless you understand the history of Iran. First of all, they had a democratically elected president. His name was Mossadegh, and the CIA went in and deposed him. They had him overthrown. We brought the Shah of Iran to power in 1953. Why did we do that? The man was democratically elected. We didn't want him, certainly. We wanted the Shah. So we put the Shah in, and he played ball with and did everything America wanted. He was the sixth largest military in the world. He was firmly behind America, but then we had him overthrown, and it was the CIA who overthrew the Shah in 1979 and brought the mullahs to power. And, of course, we helped them. We were financing the Ayatollah Khomeini at the time. 1979, we brought the mullahs to power. And at the time, I said, why would we overthrow the friend of America, the Shah, whether you like him or not? He was a pro-American, and replace him with people who ostensibly are anti-American and who subsequently carried out all sorts of terrorist attacks on America, whether it be the bombing of the American embassy in Beirut, or the bombing of the American Marine Corps barracks in Beirut, or suddenly kidnapping and torturing to death the CIA station chief there in Beirut. Why would we do that? It just doesn't make any sense. Unless maybe it's all political theater, unless it's all staged. And now we're told that the wicked Iranians, of course, whether it's President Ahmadinejad, who obviously looks like he came from Central Casting, whether President Ahmadinejad from Central Casting makes all these terrible, terrible statements. A lot of them are true, but since he's such a terrible, wacky guy who wants to kill and destroy Israel and destroy the great state in America, everything he says must be wrong. So basically now, it's certainly his regime supposedly is behind this plot. And we know this is true because, of course, the CIA drug informant, the DEA drug informant, but you pick up the story.
Yeah, it's really not substantively inaccurate to call this guy a CIA drug informant because the Drug Enforcement Administration was actually calved off of the CIA about 40 years ago from the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. The CIA actually went through and vetted people and put the people it wanted into this sibling organization that was its foil in what amounts to the active measures the CIA has been carrying out in the field of narcotics smuggling since its inception or before. The CIA basically is the world's largest drug smuggling syndicate. It's got its hand in just about everything that goes on in that netherworld. And the DEA's role in this is a foil for the purpose, I contend, of helping to inflate the street value of narcotics. I mean, the drug war is just an exercise in price support.
If I could just comment, if anybody finds that difficult to believe, I suggest you go up on the Internet and type in CIA drugs and see what comes up in your search engine. You get all sorts of articles written by people who know that the CIA is involved in drugs. We carry a book called The Hunt for Kunsaw. He was the largest drug smuggler in the world. He was working hand in glove with the White House. But this is a book actually put together after 6 or 8 years of research. We carry it, The Hunt for Kunsaw. We have the book, of course, Defrauding America by Rodney Stitz. He was sent to prison under cooked up charges. And when he was there, he ran into DEA agents, FBI agents, CIA agents, who told him that they were in prison because they were trying to bring out that the CIA was involved in drug smuggling. We carry the book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, by Monica Jensen Stevenson. Somebody accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of the book. Just shredded the 5,000 copies because it talks about the CIA and drugs and how they used to take our men killed in action in Korea and desecrate their bodies, cut open the abdominal cavity, take out the innards, pack them full of narcotics so that they could be brought into the United States. And, I mean, who would want to desecrate the body by suddenly undressing them there before they came into America? Basically, we're talking about something so horrible to contemplate, most Americans can't believe it. The trouble is, it's true, but check it out on the Internet. That's one thing the Internet is wonderful for, because you can get the information you will never hear on ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post, yes, even on Fox News, controlled by Rupert Murdoch, because they're all tied into the Council on Foreign Relations, the Brotherhood of Darkness, and you go right ahead, William.
When we're talking about this specific plot, the thing that I find most remarkable about it is how this apparatus of elite control, however you want to characterize it, if you want to call it a conspiracy, the Brotherhood of Darkness, if you want to refer to it as deep politics, you're dealing here with people who are not particularly fastidious about concealing their tracks because of the phenomenon you just referred to, Dr. Stan, that is that there's something fundamentally repellent about what they do from the perspective of those of us who want to be proud of our country and the people in our country who want to retain some faith in the government that supposedly represents us. We just simply don't want to embrace the idea that these people could be quite that cynical and quite that irredeemably corrupt. But at every juncture, this supposed plot was stage managed by the United States government. Once again, you've got a DEA informant who was representing, supposedly, he was a veteran of, in any case, the U.S.-trained and equipped Mexican drug cartel, who put together this supposed plot to murder a Saudi ambassador, and he was courting this addle-pated and probably mentally infirm fellow from Texas who thought that he was arranging a deal to sell U.S.-protected opium to the Mexican drug cartel. What had happened originally is that this fellow from Texas, this recidivist criminal who was a notoriously unreliable person as a businessman, he was a used car dealer, and of course, that is itself fodder for comedy. This, I believe his name is pronounced Arababsia, Arababsiar, forgive me, Mansur our Bob Cr. This guy originally approached the DEA's informant trying to set up a drug deal, supposedly, involving opium that was confiscated in Iran through Iran's equivalent of U.S. asset forfeiture program. In other words, they were taking opium out of Afghanistan. It was being transshipped from Afghanistan through Iran. That opium originated in poppy fields that are guarded by U.S. soldiers for the most part. One of the big initiatives right now in Afghanistan is that you have U.S. soldiers guarding poppy fields while you have DEA officials working with Delta Force and other special forces units to take out key, that is to say, antagonistic opium lords in Afghanistan. Only the officially favored opium lords are going to have the benefit of U.S. protection. So you got the government working as a protection racket, basically, in Afghanistan. Most of that opium ends up being transshipped into Iran. The Iranian officials, who have draconian drug laws in that country, of course, seize the opium, and that means that there's a huge supply of an immensely valuable cash crop that ends up in the hands of opportunistic people, one of whom may or may not have been connected to this Mansour Babsiar. In any case, this guy found out that there was a fellow who'd been attached to a Mexican drug cartel. Not knowing that he was a DEA informant, he approached this guy. And the DEA informant, who's, of course, conveniently anonymous, as all such informants and provocateurs are, apparently talent scouted this guy, got in touch with his handlers, with the DEA and the FBI, and they are the ones who put together this grandiose plot. Not a single element of the supposed assassination plot originated with the Iranian American. Not a single recorded conversation exists. According to the affidavit, the indictment, the criminal complaint, not a single recorded conversation exists in which the supposed orchestrator, the supposed go-between with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, took the initiative in putting together an assassination plot. He thought he was going to be doing a drug deal. And enough is known about this guy, his personality, his background, his record of petty thefts and petty crimes, the fact that he has a criminal record, the fact that he is reputed to be somebody with a very severe substance abuse problem of his own, including an addiction to alcohol. He's an alcoholic, which is not something that would be looked upon with favor by people who are Islamic fundamentalists, and certainly not the sort of a person who'd be an agent under discipline, a sleeper agent working for the Iranian intelligence service. This guy had nothing to do with an assassination plot. This is something that was suggested to him by the DEA informant. And that fits the morphology, the standard story, the template, if you will, of all these controlled so-called sting operations that are just basically confected provocations by the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Forces. And I've talked about this with you before, Dr. Stan, and I've written about it extensively at Pro Libertate. Judge Andrew Napolitano, who's a Fox News commentator and I think probably, well, easily the brightest star in that particular firmament, has pointed out that there had been no fewer than 17 pseudo-terrorist plots or terrorist pseudo-plots that have been orchestrated by the FBI since 2002.
But, you know, I think that's amazing. They've got about 15,000 agents out there trying to entrap people, and they've only been able to get 22 people foolish enough to go along with it. With 15,000 agents with unlimited funds to bribe people, to cajole them into wanting to go along with the terrorist plot, and approaching all the Muslims that they can find, you know, and trying to get them to agree to something, they've only been able to come up with 20. My goodness, we're wasting an awful lot of money. 15,000 people, agent provocateurs out there, ought to be able to do a better job than that. And certainly, but go right ahead. I think we could probably get down maybe 5,000 and save quite a bit of money. Go right ahead.
Yeah, that's certain. But this is the sort of thing that represents a return on investment.
Right.
Yeah. They invest the money, and this is exactly what they were after.
And some of these guys get $500,000 to entrap some poor guy, you know, and they say, oh, boy, we're going to blow up the Sears Tower. We're going to blow up the subway. We're going to blow up the latest one. They're going to blow up the Pentagon with a model airplane packed with C4 explosives. That was the latest one. But don't you worry. There is nothing to worry about because the FBI had it under control. William, go right ahead.
Well, the FBI doesn't have to worry about it. Yep.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
Traveling with some people who may or may not have been at least talked into, at least considering being involved with some terrorist plots overseas. But this young man, suddenly all he did, there was no evidence that he'd done anything or he was considering any terrorist act, but because he was simply knew these people. And how long, of course, the fellow who really was behind the whole mastermind behind this whole thing got off with a slap on the wrist. What did the mastermind of this thing get, the one who was the government agent, or at least who testified for the government against all these other poor saps?
He hasn't been sentenced yet, but he's, of course, been given a downward departure from the potential life sentence that these two young men in their 20s who did nothing materially to advance any criminal plot of any kind, confront. They very possibly could end up getting life either without possibility of parole or be given a life sentence that would amount to 30 years or such in what would, by any rational reckoning, be considered a type of institutionalized torture, one of these supermax prisons. If anybody has actually investigated what the conditions are like in the supermax prison, they're literally, in my opinion, high-tech gulags. You're denied any semblance of creature comforts or any contact with any other human being. And the thing is, it doesn't take a whole lot to end up in a facility of that sort. There are some people who are admittedly horrible folks who end up in those institutions. But these are people, once again, the case of Ziad Yagi is, in his case, he just happened to be in contact with people who were alleged to be terrorists. And on the basis of the testimony of the ringleader and the confidential informant, he's been brought into the ambit of this plot. The thing is, in the case of what happened in Yemen with Samir Khan and Anwar al-Awlaki, you have these people who were considered to be outlaws in the sense of enjoying no protection of any legal due process immunities whatsoever.
No, they were the ones who were killed by the drone.
By the drone, exactly. Right. There were actually two drones that were sent to kill Anwar al-Awlaki. One was controlled by the Pentagon, one was controlled by the CIA, and they were basically the race to see which side would get credit for the
kill. If they knew exactly where they were, why didn't we just send the helicopter in some special forces and arrest them and try them for criminal activity? But you see, what they did is they wanted to kill them. They did not want to arrest them anymore, and they wanted to arrest Osama bin Laden, if that was really Osama bin Laden. Certainly they could have arrested him. He said he was unarmed. Instead of that, they killed this unarmed man. We don't know who he was. Maybe it was Osama. But then they immediately, you know, they just took a swab and they determined by suddenly his DNA, which they were able to do right there in the room or in the helicopter, that it really was Osama bin Laden. They took his body out, dumped it in the Indian Ocean. But they can't let us see the proof and they can't let us see the films. And we're supposed to believe everything that they told us. These are the same people who told us all about the Gulf of Tonkin incident. That's how we got into the Vietnam War and we killed 58,000 Americans. And about 3 million Vietnamese, and we turned out to be a lie. Oh, shucks, it was just a lie. Just a little white lie, though. Ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, the people who control the government, not our government, this is their government, and the people who control it are certainly not people of integrity or honor. Go ahead.
Exactly. In the case of what happened with these two U.S. citizens in Yemen, they were designated, at least Anwar al-Awlaki was designated, an enemy of the state, to use the unironic description that was offered in an editorial in the Deseret News of Salt Lake City about a week ago, and unlawful enemy combatants on the basis of what they had said. I mean, their actions, their so-called bellicose or warlike actions, consisted of things that they had said, not plots that they had been involved in or material support they had given. In the case of Ziad Yagi, this young man from North Carolina, he was convicted of terrorism simply because he knew somebody. They were able to prove that he knew somebody who was accused of being a terrorist. They were never able to demonstrate in the courtroom that he had ever done or said anything.
Well, did he have a lawyer? Did he have any defense?
That's the interesting thing about this trial. I'm going to be writing about this for probably the first installment of Pro Libertate next week, but the thing about this peculiar cases that the prosecution took 3 weeks to present its case, and the defense was over in a day, and the attorney supposedly representing Ziad Yagi and one of the other defendants didn't present any evidence at all. And it wasn't because they considered the case the prosecution laid down to be completely trivial. It's because, for whatever reason, they decided to throw the case.
Well, I think that you have to understand that their lawyers are certainly not necessarily people of integrity, and you can certainly buy a defense lawyer, you can buy a judge, really, if you got enough money, and certainly they want to convict as many people as they can. Why do you think one in every 33 Americans is in prison, probation, or parole today? Do you think they're all guilty? We got more people in prison in America than they have in communist China. I wonder why in free America that's going on.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and one in every 33 adult Americans is in prison, probation, or parole today. One in every three young black men between 21 and 31 is in prison, probation, or parole today. I wonder why. Go right ahead, William.
The reason why this is so is because this is probably the only industry that still functions in this country. We've deindustrialized in terms of producing things that the world wants to buy in large measure. We've found ourselves slipping in terms of our ability to create, and more importantly, we're slipping in terms of competitiveness with respect to the business environment of this country on account of the onerous regulatory burden and tax burden inflicted by the government that rules us, and also by an academic culture that punishes people who think outside the phalanx of the consensus, so to speak, people who emerge out from the collective and do things that are innovative and revolutionary. And we just recently observed the passing of Steve Jobs. He's somebody who is iconoclastic in the sense of confronting and exploring and challenging every embedded assumption, and he perhaps is one of the last of that kind who will make that type of an impact on the world. What's happening is that the prison industry and the so-called homeland security industry, if you will, represent the only things that are really functioning in the country, because the government has managed to redirect the entire revenue stream generated by what remains of our free economy in the direction of the homeland security apparatus and the punitive department, if you will, of that apparatus. That's why we keep building prisons. The assumption is we'll fill them up somehow. And when you have excess capacity in the incarceration realm, the government will create regulations and edicts that it will enforce as if they were actual legitimate laws and fill up those facilities with warm bodies. There are plenty of profits to be made that way. And the other thing I find really remarkable about our situation, if you contrast our supposed free legal system with those of other countries, is that the right to trial, the right to a jury trial, has been effectively nullified by the government, because in federal courts in particular, you almost never see cases go to trial. Fewer than 3% of all federal cases actually go to trial because...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You're right ahead.
Yeah, because of the leverage that is offered to prosecutors under, I guess you'd have to call it federal law, there are literally more enforceable statutes and regulations than anybody in the Justice Department or that entity of the regime calling itself the Justice Department can count. They cannot provide us with a list of the laws, or what we're supposed to call laws, that we are supposedly required to obey. So at any point, any of us could be committing a grotesque number of crimes, felonies. Harvey Silverglate's book, Three Felonies a Day, is once again probably the best resource that we have available on that subject. He estimates that every single day, your typical American citizen, adult American citizen, is going to commit three acts that could be, with a minimal investment of prosecutorial ingenuity, and believe me, these people have bottomless reservoirs of depraved creativity, could be described as felonies. And so we've reached a point now where somebody can be considered a terrorist on the basis of what he says, the opinions that he expresses in public. One of the things that happened at this recent trial in North Carolina is that the federal prosecutors took 3 weeks to play recordings that were made by the confidential informants. Once again, the Fed-controlled informant provocateurs do most of the talking in these circumstances, because they're the ones who are weaving the web. It's usually not the people that they're talking to who are displaying a tendency toward committing acts of violence or sharing well-developed plans for impending criminal violence. It's usually the informant who shows up and says, hey, I've got an idea, listen to this. And it's on that basis the people who are his audience are considered to be co-conspirators, whether they want to be or not. But the federal prosecution spent 3 weeks unveiling its case, and a lot of it was taken from Facebook postings. One of the members of the defense team tried to find some way to introduce context to show how the Facebook postings that federal prosecutors had presented had been selectively cherry-picked to winnow out from context a handful of incendiary statements that could be seen as exhortations toward terrorism or endorsement of sectarian violence or things of that sort. But once again, the defense only took a day to outline its case. And the thing about this trial, apart from the fact that to my eyes, this looks like another really good example of defense attorneys throwing a case to federal prosecution, is that in the case of this one young man in particular, Ziad Yagi, you have somebody who was convicted of terrorism because he happened to know somebody who had been involved in a supposed plot. And he happened to be in the room when somebody said something that was construed as some kind of circumstantial evidence of a disposition to commit terrorism. So if you are so much, it's not enough now, it's not merely the case that you can be accused of committing terrorism on the basis of what you say, but on the basis of what you hear, you can be considered a terrorist. If somebody shows up at a meeting and says something that is taken as an incitement to terrorism, if you're at that meeting under the precedent set at this Triad case in North Carolina, you could be prosecuted for terrorism simply because you knew somebody and you happened to be in the room when something that was said that the federal government construed as terrorism. That would be sufficient evidence under this precedent if it's applied uniformly, is taken as a categorical imperative, that you could be prosecuted for terrorism. But an even grimmer possibility, of course, owing to the fact that we now have the Alaki precedent on the book, is that you could be designated an unlawful enemy combatant, and then on the basis of a secret finding by an anonymous Star Chamber-type panel that apparently is connected to the National Security Council, on the basis of a finding they would issue in secret that the president would sign off on, you could be summarily executed. Wouldn't necessarily be by way of some exotic technology, such as a Hellfire missile fired from a drone. It could be by way of some other form of executive execution. Of course, there are people, as you point out, Dr. Stan, there are people in the employ of the federal government who excel at this kind of thing. But these are the types of precedents that are being set and acted on by the government that presumes to rule us right now. And I want to underscore once again the fact that the so-called federal justice system has effectively abolished the jury system, so we can't really rely on the idea that we would actually be tried by a jury of our peers. And as it happens, most federal juries are so malleable, so credulous when you're dealing with the high-profile prosecution of somebody who has been demonized by the federal government and by the media, or do I repeat myself, that even if you do end up with a jury trial, which almost never happens, you're most likely going to find yourself in a bad circumstance, particularly if you're dealing with attorneys of the sort who end up representing most clients in situations of this kind. The system is so thoroughly rigged that most of the defense attorneys who are likely to gravitate to prosecutions of this sort to represent the high-profile defendants are most likely the sort of people who will throw the defense. As I pointed out, less than 3% of federal criminal accusations or federal criminal actions end up in jury trials, owing to the fact that federal prosecutors have the means to extort from people preemptive plea bargains. Most of the time, people simply sign off on a deal where they admit guilt to something, and they can find guilt for something. It's really, as I've said before, sort of a burlesque or a blasphemous parody of the principle we read about in the book of Romans in the New Testament, where we're told that the purpose of the law under Moses was not to make us righteous, but to make us aware of our sin, because we sin against the absolute standard of goodness and righteousness incessantly. And we, in any practically any act at any time, can be doing something that would offend against a standard of absolute justice in absolute righteousness. So we're incapable of being righteous by our own effort. That means we're at the mercy of God's grace, that we'll get something other than that which we deserve, which, of course, is the good news. The good news is that, you know, God is not going to give us what we deserve. He's going to give us something better if we'll accept it. That's what it says in the book of Romans. The burlesque of that, the profane counterfeit of that offered by the government that rules us, is the idea that we're criminals in everything that we do, and by the magnanimous grace of the all-powerful state, you know, peace be upon it, we'll enjoy some semblance of freedom until the government decides otherwise. And we've reached a point now where literally anybody can find himself dragooned into federal court and face the prospect of living out the rest of his life in institutional confinement. And the other thing that I find really interesting, this is something Lou Rockwell pointed out just recently, is that in the so-called trials that exist, the defendant wins once every 212 times. In other words, you've got less than a 1 in 212 chance if you go to federal court that you're going to prevail. Now, what I find interesting there is that anybody who studied the Soviet legal system that took hold in 1917 to 1921 when the Bolsheviks seized control of Russia, the situation that exists in the American system is very similar, even though we still retain at least the forms of a jury trial. The form has been systematically emptied of its content. In Russia, in 1864, I believe it was, Alexander II instituted a number of reforms that were quite commendable. He emancipated the serfs, and he instituted a law that created jury trials for all criminal offenses, although unfortunately in Russia there was still a separate legal track for so-called political crimes. And so you had in Russia not only the Anglo-Saxon system of jury trials take root, but in many ways it was even more radical in a good way than our own version of that system, because they had broad and plenary authority assigned to the juries to try both the facts and the law. And of course, we have the same tradition. That's something most people who are called for jury duty don't understand, and when you try to explain it to somebody who's a potential juror, you can find yourself being dragged before a court, before a judge, and charged with contempt of court and jury tampering simply for explaining to potential jurors that if they are selected for jury duty, they do not have to defer to the judge's instructions. They have plenary authority, that is to say, absolute unqualified authority, to serve as both the judge, serve as judges of both the facts of a trial and the justice of law, and they can set aside the law if they see fit to do so in order to acquit somebody, if that harmonizes, that comports with the law, meaning the law that we recognize as justice. In Russia, you have the same thing, and it was expected that these people would act as, if you will, nullifiers of imperial laws if they were administered unjustly or if the law, law itself was unjust. That lasted from 1864 to 1917. When the Soviets came in, they initiated a new system that abolished the jury system outright. You no longer had a jury. What you had instead was a procuracy, that would be the prosecutors, and then judges who were employed, of course, by the state, by the same apparatus, and then what were called people's assessors. And the role of the people's assessor was not to try the facts, but rather to help the judge to try the facts. The judge was the trier of fact. This is what is called in legal parlance an inquisitorial system rather than a jury system. And the purpose is not to establish the guilt or the innocence of the defendant, quite frankly, is to assess the individual in terms of whether he's considered to be a socially dangerous person. That, at least, is how the Soviets approached it. So you had a system in the Soviet Union where two to six of these so-called assessors would work hand in mailed fist with a judge. And they all worked for the Communist Party, and they were all actually appointed by the party. They were expected to act under the discipline of the party, so much so that on one occasion, according to an account I read of late Stalin-era trials in the Soviet Union, there was a judge who was told that, or rather a judge who reported to a journalist in the Soviet Union, that he would stand at attention while he was on the phone taking direction from the party commissar for his region with respect to the details of a given trial, the priorities that he would follow. And so these were called telephone trials because the judge was literally taking dictation over the telephone from the local commissar as to how to conduct these criminal trials. The assessors themselves were not jurors, once again. They were expected to give their assent to whatever the judge would decree. And they became known as nodders because they would always nod in agreement with whatever the judge would say, rather than exercising even a particle of critical scrutiny when dealing with a case that was being made against an accused person in Soviet Russia. So you had nodding courts and telephone courts, and you had something very close to a 100% conviction rate. As a matter of fact, in the late 1940s, after World War II, when Stalin's derangement was becoming pronounced and people were becoming more and more frantic, pressure was put on the procurators, the procuracies, it was called, the prosecutors in that system, to bring about a 100% conviction rate. Fairly close. They came fairly close. They never achieved a 100% conviction rate. But you know what? If you have a system in the United States where you have a 1 in 212 chance of prevailing if your case goes before a federal court, that's, I think, respectably close to a 100% conviction rate, which means that actually the system in this country has outstripped the one in the Soviet Union in terms of being simply a pro forma way of placing the imprimatur of a court on the decisions by the state to send somebody to prison.
And isn't that, perhaps that's why today in America, about one of every 103 American adults is in prison, one of every 33 adults is in prison, probation or parole. Nobody ever talks about this. And I know I was called for jury duty recently, and the judge said, certainly, I said, now, is there anybody, when they were interviewing the jurors, is there anybody here who will not take my direction? I mean, will you, Sidney, agree that the Sidney, whatever I tell you, you will not look at the judge, you will not look at the law, you will not look at the Constitution, you will only follow my directions. And I thought to myself, I mean, obviously this judge knows the American tradition of jury nullification, but the jury has the right to determine not only the guilt or innocence, but the validity of the law. And this is a court right here in the town where I live, and this is what our judges are doing, and they're telling the jury ahead of time that there will be no nullification. They are to do exactly as instructed by the judge, and this is unconstitutional, and I believe it's criminal activity, and the lawyers go along with it, and nobody dares to speak out.
Well, it's racketeering, Dr. Stan, in a specific sense of the expression. They are perpetrating a fraud in the color through the under the color of supposed authority, by getting people to forswear themselves in a way that violates not only their rights, but their legal duty. People who are jurors in our system have not only the right to try both fact and law, they have the duty to do so. This is something John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, in an actual jury trial, there was an actual jury trial held in, I believe, 1794 before the Supreme Court. He actually said in so many words when he was charging the jury, that they, and not he, would be the triers of fact. And that's something that has not been respected or upheld for most of our history. Unfortunately, there are some exceptions. But here in Idaho, and this is in Idaho, the gem state, you know, the gateway to the great Northwest, the most anti-government state in the Union, we're told, the legal system here has become so fetid with corruption and arrogance that when people are selected for jury duty, when they go through voir dire, when they are being winnowed out through peremptory challenges, they are told before they are subjected to the examination by counsel that they have to sign a document explicitly saying that they will be bound by the judge's instructions. And that is fraud. It is not only fraud, it's a form of criminal fraud, because they are seeking not only to implicate these jurors in a fraud, that is to say, I would consider to be a part to inculpate them in a criminal conspiracy, but they're also cheating the defendant of his constitutional rights under the color of supposed authority. There was a heroic exception to this a couple of years ago, a woman by the name of Carol Asher, who was called on for jury duty in a narcotics trial. And in the jury deliberations, she pointed out that she didn't think that the prosecution had made its case that the young man who had been found with narcotics in the vehicle knew that the narcotics were there, and so by virtue of the benefit of the doubt, he was supposed to be acquitted. And she ran into opposition from the rest of the jurors, and she pointed out just in passing that they had the right and the duty to make the government prove its case, and that they actually had the right to set aside a law that they considered to be unjust. She ended up, after the man was acquitted, being prosecuted for perjury. Thankfully, the charges were dismissed, but the powers that be were going to send her to prison for 12 years because she'd been a conscientious juror in the state of Idaho. A woman in her 60s, a retired nun. That's how bad things have gotten.
Well, it's our job, William, is to educate people and to get them to act responsible. They can't build the prisons fast enough if we have enough of good Americans who are willing to take a stand against the corruption that exists. But maybe what we need is a revival. And maybe what we get these lawyers and judges to believe in God and believe they're answerable to Him. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program, but you know I got so interested in everything you were saying, I forgot to give you an opportunity to get out your number.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download and print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.